Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Ravanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravanelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom, and our guest for today, who doesn't need an introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. He scored 29 goals this season. He beat Bernie Slaven's record. We couldn't be more happy for him and to have him on this podcast. It's Borough's number 29. It's Tuba Rakpom. Tuba, how are you doing? Thank you for coming on.
Hi, guys. What an intro that was, by the way. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Appreciate having you on. And look, Tuba, obviously, if you haven't seen this podcast before, if you have, then great. But at the start of every show, I always ask everyone how they're feeling in three words. But I'm going to ask you to describe how your career is so far in three words. So have you got three words to describe your career so far?
Wow. I need more than three words, but I'm going to try. Where do I start? I can probably say exciting as one, because of this current season. Difficult is what another one. So many things I've had to put up with, like injuries and unsuccessful loans and stuff like that. So that's two. And another one, what can I say? Surprising, maybe. Yeah, I'd say surprising. It is really hard to direct down to three words, but I'll go with them three.
Yeah. In terms of surprising is like the word, is that because of this year, of how things have turned out?
Yeah, kind of. Especially how the season started as well, you know, it was kind of like 0 to 100. So yeah, I'd probably put it down to mainly this season.
So let's take you back then. Throughout this podcast, we want to take you back through your time at Arsenal, sign up for Borough, your loans away as well, and obviously this current season too. Hale End Academy products, regarded as the next best thing. I think you were even put in the Sun newspaper as the person that was going to play up front in one of the 2022 World Cup as well. So how did you get into football anyway, and how long were you part of the Arsenal Academy for?
So I was at home and apparently I had a lot of energy in the house. I wasn't necessarily playing football in the house, but I was just running, causing problems. And my dad just thought one day, like, he'd take me to the park. I think I must have been 4 years old or 3 years old. And he took me to the park and he said, as soon as I got there, I started playing with someone else's football. And he was a bit surprised, and he saw that I was quite interested in playing football just from there. So the next few days, he took me to like a local team called Cover FC, where I grew up. And I started playing, and he just put me on the pitch, and he said he went back to his car and he fell asleep. And my first training session, because he's thinking like, I'm not going to be good. I like it, but I'm not going to be any good. And he said that one of the players' parents came knocking on the window saying, come and watch your son, you know, like, he's really good. So that was my first session. He came and he watched me, and I was dribbling, scoring goals for fun. And from then he told me that, like, you know, he knew that I had some type of love for football or some type of talent for football. So that's how it all started.
How was it you got picked up by Arsenal from there?
So from that team that I just told you about, Cova, I went to another Sunday league team called Ripaway. We used to play every Sunday. And then the coach that was there was a mad West Ham fan, because I grew up in East London, Canning Town. So West Ham is a local team in Upton Park. So he tried to get me to go to West Ham at first when I was like 4 or 5. But when he ended up, when the West Ham scouts weren't too interested, because it was me and Alex Iwobi playing for the same team, and they weren't too interested at first. So apparently an Arsenal scout heard about us two and he came to one of our games, and he took us to Arsenal, and it just happened from there.
You were in Arsenal's academy during quite like a golden time for the club, and would have been around kind of quite a lot of superstars, I imagine, around that time. What was that experience like, kind of learning there?
It was good. It was really good. I remember the first time I went there, like to train with the first team, I must have been 16. And I remember calling players by their surname. Obviously, that's what fans probably normally do. But obviously, I'm a player. I should be calling you by your first name. But the first memory I had was calling for the ball from Koscielny. And I was like, Koscielny, Koscielny. And everyone started laughing at me. I was only 16. So, yeah, at first, it is a bit like you get a bit starstruck, because it's like players like him, like Thomas Rosicky, Jack Wilshere, and all these top players, you know. So you get a bit starstruck at first, 16, 17. But because I got there quite early, I wasn't starstruck for too long. I ended up getting used to training with them every day. Went into their dressing room, and they just became like normal teammates to me. So no, it was a really good experience. And now I can look back and think, like, you know, I was glad to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and what a great time to be part of it as well. Obviously, with the success that they had, and obviously you were starting to break through in that team, and you went on multiple loans, end up in Belgium at one point. Is there a time where for a football that you kind of think this may not work out at Arsenal, but I've still got a career ahead of me?
Yeah, there was. I think because they had quite high hopes of me at Arsenal at first. And like, I went on my first loan when I was 18, and that was quite early, you know, it was quite early to go on loan. I went to League One, Coventry and Brentford. And I think looking back, some people say maybe I should have been a bit patient, but it kind of sums me up, really. I'm really hungry to play. Even at a young age, 18, I went straight out, back to myself. Didn't work, went straight out again. I kept going straight out, you know, because I wanted to play. I didn't just want to train with the first team and stuff. So I forgot your question now, you know.
No, my question is, like, did you kind of feel like there was a point when you were going on those loans that it might not work out at Arsenal?
Yeah, that's it. So, yeah, I think after maybe my fourth or fifth loan, it got to a point where it's like, I'm going on loan, I'm not getting any success. How am I going to expect to come back and play for Arsenal first team? And, you know, you've got to be realistic with yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's when I went to Greece. I still had a year left at Arsenal, actually. So I didn't hang around for that year. I got straight out. I needed to play games. And that was at the point where I realised, you know, my future is not going to be at Arsenal.
Yeah. You mentioned Greece there. That is very strange place to go, especially when you're 22? Do you want to say 22 or 23?
22, yeah.
So why Pauk, and how did you find it there? Because that's a big step for someone who's so young, right?
Yeah, it is. I think I just maybe needed a change of environment, having gone to the Championship, having gone to League One already, and it didn't really work out for me. I think I just needed to go out there, you know, somewhere I'm not really familiar with. They were really like wanting me to come there as well. So that kind of pushed me there as well. And they showed me the plan. They had the Champions League qualifiers.
Yeah.
They were competing for the league. So it's not like I'm just going to Greece on vacation. Yeah. I'm actually going there to win something and to be a part of something. So we ended up playing in the Europa League in my first season. And then we ended up winning the double. So I did go there, you know, on a mission. I didn't just go there to just relax and stuff.
Yeah. That time, yeah. I think, in your life as well, like where you're moving away from, assuming your family, that moving away at that time. Success, of course, in Greece is amazing. In terms of like when things weren't working out, it was not as much, but like say if you're out of form and you've got low in confidence, is that quite difficult to, like, obviously, since you're in a different country, time, you know, you can't really ring your mate up straight away and be like, oh, look, like, can you come here and, like, we'll play FIFA or something? Is it quite difficult when things don't go your way, when you are playing in a different league, to get the confidence back?
Yeah, it is, definitely. Like you said, I can't just call my friend to chill out with or go out with. You know, I'm just literally there by myself. I remember sometimes during that first season, because the first 6 months I didn't play. They had a striker called Prijovic that was, I think he scored 18 by January. And then he left the club in January, and that's when I started to play. But that first few months, I had a few doubts, like, I'm doing everything I can. I'm abroad, I'm away from my family, and I'm not playing on top of that. You know, where does this go from here? So, yeah, I did have them doubts, and it was quite difficult at the start, but then everything got better from January.
You signed for Boro in September of 2020. Neil Warnock said on the Boro website when you were announced that you were his number one target. He then said in 2021, the recruitment team, he was top of their list. We couldn't watch games in that period. We only watched Tuba on the internet. He looked the best of the bunch from what we were looking at. Were you aware of those quotes from Warnock at that time?
Definitely, definitely.
You were?
Yeah. No, I tried to stay as professional as possible. There's a lot of things fans don't know about that players have to go through and stuff, like behind closed doors. But I try not to let that get in the way or distract me from my football. It is difficult because, you know, maybe sometimes players want to come out and give their opinions and tell people the truth about things, but we just got to keep our heads down and stay professional. So that's all I've tried to do, you know. If whoever said whatever about me, that's their opinion. I tried to stay humble, and I know the truth personally. So, yeah, that's all I can say about that.
Did that serve as motivation for you then when you heard those quotes? Because he switched up on you really a lot there, going from his number one to then, oh, no, he wasn't. It's the recruitment team's number one.
Yeah. I mean, it's not nice to hear it. Especially when you're trying to focus on football and stuff like that. It's not nice. Obviously, a manager's supposed to be backing you, you know, even if you've done something wrong, he's supposed to come out and back you in front of everyone, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of fans that will actually listen to what the manager's saying and follow with that narrative, unfortunately. There are some smart fans that will look into things and see that, you know, Tuba doesn't fit this style of play, or how comes the manager said this and then said that. There are some fans that look into it, but unfortunately, the majority of fans don't. I try not to look at that as much as I can.
Dana mentioned it there. You joined in September 2020, which was obviously the COVID season. I've kind of wondered aloud on this podcast before, how much of an impact did playing in an empty stadium have in that time? I think especially moving to a new club and not, you know, having the fans in the stadium, you know, as you're trying to adapt as well, did that have much of an effect?
Yeah, it probably did, to be fair. It probably did because, you know, like, fans can really change a game somehow. I don't know how, but it's just maybe the atmosphere and stuff. It just gives you that extra adrenaline, you know. And when you're playing and, you know, there's no noise in the crowd and stuff, maybe subconsciously it had an effect on me, maybe, and the team as well. Who knows? But yeah, football's always better with fans, of course.
Also, you mentioned there a quote about, you know, fitting into the system and stuff. How was the change tactically going from Pauk to playing in a Neil Warnock team around that time?
So in Pauk, we played like under a coach called Razvan Lichescu. He's a very good coach. It was very, very tactical, very tactical. So he, at the end of the season, he ended up telling me that the reason why I didn't play or as much in the first 6 months is because he thought it took me 6 months to adapt to the tactics. We used to do, honestly, 1 hour on tactics. Like, you wouldn't even break a sweat. It would all just be walking around, making sure he's here. And if you don't get it spot on, he's a perfectionist. He's shouting at me. He's kind of like Italian type of style, defensive. Everything needs to be on point tactically. So I went from that to come in to Middlesbrough, and it was if I'm being honest, it was probably not much tactics. It was a different, it was just a different style of play, like that I wasn't used to at all. It was more like direct long balls, etc., etc. So it was a really big change for me personally.
Out of interest, with what you just mentioned there about the tactic sessions in Greece, you gave a quote after, I think it was Blackpool away this season.
Sorry, guys. That was Uche FaceTiming me.
We got to keep that in.
Yeah, sorry about that. That was Uche FaceTiming me.
Yeah. Sorry, because Tom's internet shot itself anyway.
Oh, my gosh. My bad. I put my phone on airplane mode now.
That's awful. Uche, of all people, so I'm assuming you're still quite tight, right?
Yeah, we'll still speak. We was literally on FaceTime like an hour ago. So yeah, we're good friends. Yeah.
Love that.
Sorry, Tom, where were you?
Sorry, Tom.
You mentioned there about the tactic sessions in Greece, and you gave a quote after, I believe it was Blackpool away this season, where you were talking about, you know, where everyone's supposed to be on the pitch at any time when you get the ball, and, you know, that was obviously Michael Carrick that brought that in. Is there a lot of similarities between, you know, Carrick and you know, the manager you had in Greece?
Similarities as in they both focus a lot on tactics, yes. Mm. But in terms of style of play, I think the gaffer now is way more attacking than the coach I had at Pauk. The coach I had at Pauk was very defensive, like I said, like Italian type of style. But we had good individuals on the counters as well. But with the gaffer, it's more freedom to play, more attacking, more goals, you know, so yeah.
Take us back to last summer then, the summer of 2022. What was the situation like for you at Borough at that point?
I came back to pre-season late because the season in Greece finished later. So they gave me a bit more extra days off so I can rest. I've come in and I've done like my fitness test by myself. Obviously, everyone's way ahead of me at this point. I've just been told that I've been told by the kit man, Darkie, that I'm with the 23s. I tried to walk in the first team just soon, but I was told that I'm with the 23s. And obviously, it's not Darkie's. I love Darkie. It's not his. Mm. It's not his fault. He just had to give me the message. So he gave me my kit, and I walked to the 23s dressing room, and I was a bit confused because I was like, I haven't even met the gaffer. You know, I'm excited.
I was going to say, so Wilder didn't even tell you.
No, he didn't. It was the kit man, Darkie. So, yeah, that was a bit hard to take at first because I was coming back excited for pre-season, you know, new manager, a fresh start. But that's how it started. I got told to go to the 23s.
That's crazy that as well, because you'd think that in comparison to previous managers that you would suit this new system probably more, right? You're getting more ball to feet. It's coming, like, if it's low crosses in the box. I know you did score with your head a couple of times this season from Giles' crosses. But the overall system seemed to probably suit you quite well. So it's surprising to hear that you weren't really favoured straight away. And to be honest, I don't think any of us here thought that you were going to have such an amazing season that you did. But for you, obviously, you've kind of went into the under 23s changing room. Was that like the motivation for you to kind of go, well, you know what, I'm Chuba Akpom, I'll show you what I can do, kind of thing?
Yeah, I always told my friends like maybe that was a blessing in disguise without me knowing it. Because at that point, you know, I'm how old was I, 26, 27, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm with the 23s. Like I'm not Cristiano Ronaldo or anything, but I haven't had I've got a bit of it of experience, you know. I've been abroad and I've played a few games in English football. I'm not that bad, you know. So for the first few days, it was like, oh, okay, it's hard to take. But then I just switched off from like feeling sorry for myself, and I said, you know, let's work and let's be ready for wherever I'm gonna go. So I was quite disciplined, you know. I'd done my gym, I'd done my extras after I trained with the 23s. When I was by myself, I trained as much as I could, you know, just to be fit and ready for wherever I was going to go.
I mean, very admirable attitude to have, I would say. You got the chance in the pre-season game against Marseille, obviously just before the start of last season. What was the encouragement like from Wilder or the coaching staff kind of leading up to that, or even as you were just about to step on the pitch? Was there the much kind of at all to, you know, prove a point, or?
Yeah, well, I remember everyone was a bit like, everyone was coming to me saying like, you know, why is he not, why are you not training with us, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But if I'm being honest with you, I never took it personal. Mm. I generally didn't take it personal. I think I just like snapped out from feeling like sorry for myself, and I was just focused on what was to come next. So, you know, when he come and have a chat with me, I was like, I was up for the chat, no problem, you know, like, where do we go from here? I wasn't, like, negative or anything like that. I had no bad feelings towards him. So he pulled me after a 23 session, and he said, you know, like, you can train with us tomorrow, then I'm going to give you 30 minutes against Marseille instead of, like, putting one of the young players, you know, we're low on numbers, so, you know, why don't you get something out of this as well for yourself? And I just said, yeah, fair play, you know, that'd be good for me, because at this point I had played no pre-season minutes. So yeah, he told me I'm gonna get 30 minutes, and yeah, got the 30 minutes and then moved on from there.
There were only three strikers at Borough at that point, including yourself. So when you came off the bench, I mean, I've listened back to one of our episodes, all three of us thought you would still be off, even despite the cameo. Was your mindset coming off the bench there one of, I'm playing for a move here, I'm playing to put myself in the shop window, or was it one of, I've got to prove a point to let Wilder know that I should be part of his plans?
My thinking generally was, I need these 30 minutes for fitness. That's all I was thinking at this point, because I'd played no games. So it was like, I need this match fitness for where I'm going to go. I wasn't thinking about staying here. It probably, for like four games into the season, I still wasn't thinking about staying at Middlesbrough. It's mad. I was literally just playing and speaking to my agent, playing, speaking to my agent. So, yeah, everything was just to get ready for my next move out of the club.
Were there any teams that were close to signing you in the summer then?
Yeah, there was. There was, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, there was a few. And it's so weird. That's why I feel like this season was meant to be, because I'd received offers, but something wasn't right, you know? Yeah. You know when something just isn't right? There was a few times I would sleep on it and wake up in the morning and be like, this isn't the one for me, you know? You know, forget financially, forget all of that. I need to wait for something that is just right for me. And then before you knew it, literally a few days later, I received one of these offers. A few days later, I was told to play that Marseille game. So I just feel like, you know, timing and everything just worked out perfectly for this season.
Were these clubs, was it abroad interest from abroad, or was it in England?
It was mainly abroad. Mm. It was mainly abroad, yeah. So there were some in England as well, but the solid ones were more abroad.
Well, I'm glad you stayed. Yeah. So I remember watching. I was going to say, I remember when you came on against Marseille, and it was, you caught the ball, you got the ball on the turn, and then you played a lovely ball over Giles, and then he just pulled it back for Tav to score. And I was like, God, Chu was great, isn't he? Like, it was the first time I'd seen you in the flesh, really. Like, in play, because obviously it's different watching it from a screen to being in the crowd. It's completely different, right? So I was like, God, he looks a bit about him. Like, I would hopefully try to keep him around. But then we did say, like, he's probably going to go. It's, like, natural. He hasn't really seen a look in from Chris Wilder. But then you find yourself playing against Sheffield United, and then you score two, and then this is where, like, this whole tuba train happens, and you just start to constantly score all the time. But then you do get injured at that point. So you kind of think, right, I've got into some good form, I've scored a couple of goals, I'm playing well, the fans are starting to get on my side. Then you get injured. Was there a part of you then where you're thinking, oh, that's it. Like, someone else is going to take my place. I'm not going to get played again, and it's just going to be a battle till January and see where I go from there.
When I got injured that game after Sheffield, for the first few, like maybe 2 days, it was hard to take because it's like, you know, I started these games, I scored two and now I'm injured. But after that, I don't know. I was just in a really special place where I was just feeling confident. I don't know. I probably said this in a few other interviews, but I wrote down like a few goals on one of my diaries. And that was just after I got injured against Sheffield. And yeah, that's just my, that was my mentality at the time, you know, like, even though I'm injured, let's still not take our foot off the gas or of whatever they call it, off the pedal. So I was still hungry when I got injured. I was still hungry to come back. I was doing my rehab properly, and I could just feel that something special. There's something special here. And also credit to Chris Wilder as well, because he was really encouraging. You know, he might be a bit surprising to you guys and the fans, but he was really encouraging when I was injured. Maybe because he saw like I'd started quite good and maybe he's going to need me. So when I was injured, he was checking up on me and stuff like that. And yeah, I was really hungry to come back and start playing again.
Yeah. Can I ask about what you were mentioning there about the goals that you wrote down in your book? Could you share like what was on that list?
Yeah, I could. Or... I could. Some of them anyway.
Yeah, obviously I don't want to know all of them, but like what was on the list?
My first goal was to get 20 goals. And then I had, besides it, brackets, got two so far. Those brackets.
I love that.
The second goal I didn't hit was to get 5 assists. And then there was a few, like, player of the year in the Championship, player of the year in Middlesbrough, team of the season, or something about contract renewal or whatever. There was a lot. There was maybe, like, 15 things. Mm. And most of them I like, exceeded. It was crazy. So like now when I sit down and look at it, I'm like, wow, you know, I started this when I got injured, and look at it now, like this is mental, you know. I really manifested and worked towards it, and I ended up smashing it. So it's really nice to look at the book now. Sometimes I just sit in my bed and I'm like, wow, I remember when I wrote this. So
what place you're in, and have you started writing your goals for next season yet?
Not yet.
Wait for
a moment. Let him rest, Johnny. Let him rest.
Yeah, let me rest for a bit. Yeah, but definitely next season I wanna push on. Why not do the same? Why not do the same? But I've always tried to not be like small minded, because sometimes you tell people your goals. If I'd showed someone that list, they would have thought I was delusional, maybe. But sometimes you have to be delusional. Sometimes you have to think crazy. So. You know, I try not to limit myself.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com /host.
I think we should hang that book in the Mima. It's artist worthy, I think.
To be fair, Chuba, have you heard of like Bernie Slaven like thing where he sells books in the Cleveland Center when after you've scored 20 goals, you start handing out books. So maybe you could hand out that book in the Cleveland Center now that you've scored 20 goals.
So. Yeah, that's a good idea. Big Bernie, man, crazy guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing that his record lasted so long, right? And then you've went and smashed it, and I'm very confident that you'll probably smash it again this season as well.
Amen. Go for it. Pushing.
Who was it, Chuba, who was it specifically that moved you into that sort of withdrawn striker position?
It was the gaffer. It was Michael Carrick.
What has that changing position done to your game tactically?
Tactically, it's made me run a lot more, I'll tell you that. because I've got to defend now, you know. The gaffer's onto me about defending, tracking the midfielder. But tactically, going forward, it's allowed me to create space for myself to get on the ball. Everyone's always looking for me in a half turn, you know, and Riley as well in a half turn. I'm arriving in the box. I get to time my runs better. I'm not necessarily fighting with the centre-back to get on the end of crosses, although it did end up happening towards the end of the season a bit more. I was becoming a bit marked up. So, just tactically, it's really helped me a lot.
There's a bit of a debate about this in our little group chat. Would you categorise your role as a number 10?
I personally would say I'm a second striker. But my mum thinks I'm playing two positions, so you can put that in the group chat. my mum thinks I'm playing as a midfielder and a striker. She says I'm doing two jobs and I must be tired and stuff. So some people see me as a 10 because I do drop very deep.
Mm.
But I'd probably say I'm more like a second striker, simply because of the runs that I make in the box. I think the runs that I make in the box are like what number nines do, kind of number nine runs. But when I'm away from the box, I play as a 10 as well. So it's kind of between a 10 and a 9. I don't know what that is, 9.5 or something. I don't know.
To be honest, but I think you're making your own position this season, Chuba. I think it's just the at pom role.
I don't know, honestly. It's whatever you want it to be, to be honest. I'm not too fussed.
Yeah. How important is Jonathan Woodgate being on the training pitch as well for you? Because you've mentioned him quite a few times in interviews.
Yeah, I do. Him and Danksy. No, Woody's been really top with me. He's just so humble, you know, telling me stories about when he was at Ronaldo's house and all these things. But they just spread their advice and their knowledge throughout the whole team. I've never seen the gaffer or Woody panic or nothing like that. Always positive and always talking to me. Like Woody's always telling me, you know, like, you know, you're the best player in the championship and stuff like that, you know, walk with your chest high and, you know, go and show them. He's always like putting positivity into my mind. And I really appreciate that. He did Cruyff turn me in training one time and I won't forget that. I went to press him thinking, you know, Woody's retired. That was hard to take because everyone was laughing at me. He's Woodgate though. He played for Real Madrid. So he's got that in his locker. But I didn't expect it. You got me.
Yeah. Well, obviously the manager as well, and you said about it quite a lot in your press conferences, but why has Michael Carrick been like the manager you've always dreamt of?
Because I think he's maybe the only manager that's like really understood me as a player and as a person. He can see how hungry I am in training. You know, I'm never satisfied. I'm really competitive. And on the pitch as well, he really understands the type of player that I am. So he's just always looking to get the best out of me. So I've never really had that before in my career. So that's why I'm always try to tell people how grateful I am.
Yeah, from what you were from what you've been saying, you know, with Woodgate, Cruyff telling you, sorry about mentioning that again, him telling you that, you know, you're the best striker in the championship, you know, you're getting so much praise of Danks and also Matt Carrick as well. Seems like a real positive atmosphere at the training ground and within the group at the minute. Do you think there was like quite a big culture shift when Carrick and Cole came into the building from the previous management?
I think there was a culture shift from when Leo came in. He was fantastic, like for the mood and the team spirit. We'd walk into team meetings and he's got like a picture of a lion there. And he's like shouting, "We want you to be lions," you know. But that really lifted the team spirit. And then it was a good base for the gaffer to come in and really, you know, manage us well. When the gaffer came in as well, he lifted the spirit in training and stuff like that. Tactically, it was just refreshing. All the drills that we were doing, Danksy coming up with these like finishing drills that we just loved them, you know, and everything else. So yeah, it was really refreshing.
I'm just going to reel off a bunch of things that you've achieved individually this season, so bear with me a second. The first Borough player to score 20 goals in a league season since Bernie Slaven in 1990. The first player in Championship history to score in 9 consecutive home games. 3 times PFA Championship Player of the Month. Sky Bet Championship Player of the Month for December. The Championship Player of the Year and the Golden Boot winner. Has it sunk in yet just what you've achieved individually this season, Chuba?
Not quite. Still, I do try to process things and stuff, but it's just so hard because I don't know, man. I don't know. Anytime I like see fans and stuff when I go out, they always reminded me of it. That's when I'm like, oh wow, maybe what I did was quite big this season. But in general, I just kind of like just get on with it. I should try and process it a bit more, but I don't know why I haven't.
Which one of those is like your favourite or the best one that you've achieved this season?
I'm going to have to say is it nine goals at home?
Scoring 9 consecutive home games, yeah.
It's probably going to have to be that one because when I did that, I remember before the games, I think I was on 8 and it was just on my mind the whole game, if I'm being honest. It was on my mind the whole game and just the adrenaline of just getting the ball on a half turn and the ball going in the net. Just like embracing that moment, taking off my shirt, running to the gaffer. It was really special to me. So I'm going to say that one.
What were you shouting to the stand? Can you tell us what you were shouting in the celebrations to that goal? Because everyone wants to know what Chuba Akpom was saying after that.
I don't have a clue, honestly. my teammates are asking me as well. It's just that adrenaline when you score, you go into another planet. Especially when you've been so eager to get that 9th goal. I don't know what I was saying. I don't know what I was saying, honestly. I wish I did.
Fair enough. You mentioned that goal there. That was a fantastic goal. I also like yours against Blackpool at home, the first one. I've never seen a technique like that. I don't think I ever will again. The way it's just sort of, it was almost like, how would you describe that one, Chuba? It was like a dink, but then a curl on it. You hit it really well.
Yeah, maybe a dink and a curl, maybe. I don't know. I honestly don't know what it was. It's just very instinctive. I saw, because I tried to shimmy a couple of times, but it was quite good defending at first because he wasn't really moving. So then I just had a little look up. I seen the keeper off his line. And I just thought, let me dink him in the back stick. Yeah.
What was your favourite goal of yours this season then? Because I feel like that's mine, or maybe the Sheffield United one as well.
Yeah, Sheffield United one was amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd probably say the Sheffield United one, yeah. I do quite like that.
I think
that
you
one.
Sent two of I think you sent two of their defenders desperately dive in to try and block it. I thought it was amazing.
Thank you. No, it was I don't really mind how they go in, to be honest. You can go off my elbow, you can go off my shin, no problem. As long as it goes in the net somehow, you know. But yeah, it's always nice. It's always nice scoring a goal and hearing the fans go crazy. You know, it's the best feeling.
Your relationship with the fans has absolutely skyrocketed this season. You were quite emotional after Blackpool away as well when you scored. Is that just the gratitude of them receiving you so warmly this season?
Yeah, because I know obviously how it started off when I first came here. It wasn't the best, you know, with the fans and stuff like that. So to see the turnaround and to hear them chant my name, I think that was the moment where I realised, you know, this could be a really special season for me. So, yeah, I got quite emotional. I've got quite emotional a few times this season. I need to calm down. But, yeah, it's been an emotional season, I guess.
It has. It has indeed. Yeah. What would you say to the fans that are listening to this right now, you know, after this season and the support that they've given you throughout it?
I'll just say thank you. The love that I've got from everyone. I receive messages every single day and I read them as well. I can't reply to everyone. Sorry, guys. But, you know, going to Tesco's, going to Aldi, going to the restaurants, I receive love every single way I go. I'm so grateful for it. You know, honestly, it's just an amazing feeling. You can't really describe it, you know, when people are just taking you in like that. So, yeah, just thank you guys. Honestly, I really appreciate it. I just want to do the same thing again. That gives me more motivation, you know, to go and do it again. So thank you. Thank you, guys.
I will say as well, just before Tom asks a bit about Coventry, that when we said to our little Telegram chat, our little Borough community, that you were coming on the pod, a lot of them just said, just tell him thank you. Just tell him thank you for an unbelievable season. And I think from us three as well, we have not had a lot of good strikers to talk about on this podcast. And you have been just unbelievable this season. So I'm going to return the thanks to you, Chuba. You have been absolutely phenomenal this season. And it's so uplifting and so wholesome as well to see you with that smile on your face playing football really, just really well. So, yeah, thank you to you as well.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I almost don't want to ask the next question now and kind of bring the mood down, Bonnie.
I know, yeah. I should have said that there, should I?
I needed to talk about the games against Coventry. Obviously, two very, very tough games for the team and, you know, an emotional time afterwards as well. What did you personally, and I suppose you as a group, as the team, learn from those Coventry games?
I mean, it was hard to take. It was hard to take because I feel like, you know, maybe the first game, okay, fair enough, it's a draw. The second game, as in the first playoff game, I feel like if we could have nicked a 1-0 there, that would have been great, you know. But take the draw, fair enough. We're going home, Riverside. You know our record at the Riverside. You know, let's get the win. Going into the game, really confident. Not managing to score in the three games, you know. It's not really like us, you know. We're a goal-scoring team, but it's something that we can learn from. Fair play to Coventry. They defended really well. They obviously had, like, game plans and stuff, so credit to them. But it's definitely something that we can learn from in the future, and I'm sure the gaffer always says, like, after a loss, it's interesting for him because he gets to look at the game and see where we went wrong. So it's not always a negative, although you lose, that's the negative. But the positive from that is you can learn for the next time. That's what the gaffer always says. So, yeah, we'll only make us stronger for the future.
Yeah, well, the future's happening now. And we obviously no one knows what happens in football. We appreciate the last 12 months. We didn't expect to have this conversation with you celebrating an amazing season, but 12 yeah. months from now as well. But what's exciting you about the Michael Carrick era at Middlesbrough and probably in the next few months?
What's exciting is that was only the start. So imagine a team when we've gelled together for even longer. The experience that we've had already, and we weren't even together for a full season. He came in when was it October? So imagine if we get a full pre-season together, and we go into the season together. Like, and obviously a few additional players come in, it could be an amazing season, fingers crossed. So that's really exciting. That's really exciting.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple more questions to ask, and we did ask our Telegram chat if they wanted to ask you a question. And Brad's asked, what's your preferred shirt number? Obviously, if 29 was taken over one day, what number would you go for?
I'd probably go for 10.
Oh, yeah. Weren't you 10 at Arsenal for some point in time, or am I dreaming that?
That's when I was younger, when I was like 15, 14, yeah. 15, I was, yeah. But, yeah, if 29 is my, that's my baby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, now, anyway, before it wasn't, but this season it is. Yeah. I love that number. But number 10, probably number 10. I did have number 10 when I first came here, didn't I?
Yeah.
You did, yeah.
Then I had about 10 numbers after that. I think I went to 19. I can't remember. I had a few other numbers after that. But yeah, I'd say 10.
Did you choose the number this year, 29? Or were you just given it?
I chose it, but there was only a certain amount of certain numbers that I could take. Obviously, yeah. Available, there were 7, 11, 10, 9. They were all available, but I was told at the time that I could only have these other numbers, and 29 was one of them, so I took it.
That's interesting. Okay, so the next question is from Matt, and he says, who do you think is the most underrated player at Middlesbrough?
I wouldn't say he's underrated, but I'd say Johnny Howson. At this level, he's the best I've played with in the championship. Wow. You know, he's unreal. He's unreal. Like, I think like all the players say the same thing as well. They're just like, Johnny's a joke. Like, how old is he? 30 what? 34? He gets the ball in tight spaces. He always makes the right decision for 99% of the time. He leads by example on the pitch. He's not really the most vocal player, but on the pitch, you know, he leads by example. He just has that know-how, you know. If you don't need to pass it there, you go long. You know, if you don't need to go long, you keep it. He just always makes the right decisions. And I feel like that sets the tone for the team. So although he's not underrated, I know, by the fan base and by the players, I think he could be rated even more by everyone because he's a joke of a player. So, yeah, Johnny Howson.
So a couple more questions. One is from Tom, and he says, who do you support? Appreciate you support Middlesbrough right now, but outside of Middlesbrough, what team do you support?
Arsenal.
Arsenal coming through. Yeah, got to, right? Team that you came through with. It makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard being an Arsenal fan, but yeah.
Well, this season, especially.
Well, yeah, you're amazing this season, though, right? And like, it's Pep's Man City. Like they're a bit of a joke, aren't they? To be honest. So, but to be fair, what do you think of the job Arteta's done? Like over the last 2 or 3 seasons.
Amazing job. They've always said, like, people have always said, you know, trust the process with Arteta. And I think he's starting to show, you know, why you should, because with a young team, you know, although they didn't quite win the Premier League, they've done amazing, you know. So, you know, the future looks bright at Arsenal as well with Arteta.
Okay, then. And then the final 2 questions is, what do you want to achieve in football before you retire?
I'd like to score goals in the Premier League. Hmm. That would be my dream for sure. You know, I look at all the top players in the Premier League and I'm like, you know, these guys are amazing. So, you know, I want to do the same thing that they're doing, you know. That would be class.
Well, I hope not this season, the season after, you do it in a Middlesbrough shirt, and I think you will. But the final question, and we ask every guest that we have on this question, so to pick a 5-a-side team, so the best people that you've played with. You can have 2 subs as well, so the goalkeeper, 4 outfield players, and your 2 subs. And you can choose yourself as well, so if you wanted to be in the 5-a-side team, you definitely can. But if you could pick a 5-a-side team from the best players you play with, who would you pick and why?
I probably don't even make it on the bench for this team. I'd say in goal, I'd go Peter Cech. top goalkeeper, top guy. Right, what formation am I going? Am I going 2-2-1? Yeah, 2-2-1. Centre back, Laurent Koscielny. Very good. The other centre back, I'll go Craig Dawson. From my time with him at Hot, was it Craig?
Michael Dawson.
His first name, is it Michael Dawson? Sorry, I thought I was going crazy. Yeah, Michael Dawson, sorry.
We were just there.
I feel sorry for Craig Dawson right now. Like,
sorry, Michael Dawson. Michael Dawson, yeah. Top leader, top centre back. In midfield, I'll say Santi Cazorla.
Mm.
Oh, this is so tight. Santi Cazorla with. So I'll go Santi sitting deep on. I'm going to have to put Alexis Sanchez in front of him. I don't know how that's going to work, but it's going to work.
It's a team of flair, isn't it?
Yeah. And then up top, I'll put Giroud. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put Giroud up top, yeah. That's the team there.
And then any subs? Yeah.
The two subs will be Mesut Ozil and Thomas Rosicky.
Oh, wow. That's like a solid team. That is a very, very good team. I feel sorry for any Borough players that are watching now. I'm going, why didn't you pick Michuba? Like,
oh, sorry, man. I put Jailo on the bench as my third player.
Can I just ask about that?
Yeah, go on.
I just wanted to ask about that dynamic on the pitch between you and Giles, actually, because you've linked up a lot this season, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. And he still gets on to me because I lost him a few assists this season. He could have had like two or three more assists. But we really work on it in training, and we speak a lot as well about like how the defense plays and stuff. So yeah, we have worked on it a lot.
Would you like to see him back at the Borough next year?
Yeah, I tell him every day. I sit next to him in the changing room. I sit next to him and I tell him every day, and I'm like, I tell him I'll chip in like £100 if I have to, you know. But yeah, he's happy here. He's really happy here. He's a real like character in the dressing room. He's probably the loudest guy in the dressing room. Always having banter with everyone. Yeah, everyone loves him, and he's a top player as well. So I think any team would be happy to have a player like him. He's top.
Brilliant. Well, Chuba, thank you very much for joining us this evening, taking time out of your time off to speak with us. Have a fantastic time away. Enjoy pre-season. And I think we can't wait to see you in a Borough shirt again in the next couple of months. But in terms of us right now, you can, if you like this video, do give it a thumbs up, give it a share, like, subscribe, all that kind of fun stuff that helps us get found by other Borough fans and all of that fun stuff. But for right now, this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all YouTube at Akpom chatter in a podcast of the Borough Breakdown.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.